Here goes the ball burster.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a goal. What a kick from Toby Green. Right on quarter time.
The Giants even up the ledger with a 36-point victory, while the Blues will return home from Sydney. Three straight losses, season finished, and some tough questions to answer.
Disappointing. I thought they smacked us around the ball, particularly the tackle count. Our ability to go in and win the ball from a ground ball point of view were okay. I think we won the ground balls, but after that, they just beat us. They tackled us. Their ability to get pressure on us, we'd handball to someone else that was under pressure, and we couldn't get any clean ball movement going forward. And then when we had the opportunity to do that, we didn't use the ball well. We missed opportunities in front of goal. The shots we were getting weren't great, and I thought GWS's ability to use the ball and find free targets was far better than ours. The players are hurting, the coaches are hurting, and our fans will be really hurting. They've been so good to us, they stick by us. So we understand that it's, it'd be frustrating for them right now, but we think if we continue to work hard, we've got to get better, but we think we've got that in us that... and I know they will. Our fans are very loyal, and particularly last year through the COVID, they're outstanding. So, yep, we understand they're frustrated, and it's warranted because we're not performing the way that we should be.
The GWS Giants smack the Blues like the proverbial naughty children that they are. 2 points outside the eight now, and Carlton, in their first game after announcing their mid-season review, couldn't have put up a worse performance. They're in a real pit right now, says David Teague, asking Carlton fans to stick with us.
And Rosie plays on, bends it around, and makes them all look foolish.
Well, it's not the way Robbie Gray wanted to celebrate 250 by not taking much part in the game, but the ultimate team player, he'll enjoy the team victory. 50 points, the win today. They feast on another opposition below them. 12-9-81 to 4-7-31.
Really strong performance. Playing against a team who were probably struggling, to be fair, but we were able to come up and perform the way we wanted to perform. We knew there'd be some risk with them early because they'd come up with a poor performance. But I think we were pretty good early and started the game the way we'd like it. We got the scoreboard under control pretty quickly and managed to play the game out the way we'd like.
And if the club's under the pump, of course I'm under the pump. I mean, but that's, to be fair, like, that's every week. It's funny because people talk about, oh, are you under pressure? Well, every day, because you've got to make hundreds of decisions. We're looking after 50 lads, there's staff. So as a club, we take it really seriously, and we're really confident in our group of people that we're on the right track. We're working hard at it, but this notion of... So if we sat here after the Hawthorn game and got asked that question... Yes, you never get asked that after a win, whereas the pressure's the same each week. Personally, maybe ask some of the other coaches, but I don't think it fluctuates as much as external. For me, it's always at a high level, a healthy level.
In Robbie Gray's 250th, Port Adelaide get a 50-point win and turn the Gold Coast Suns into the Black Hole Suns. Stuart Dew admits he's under the pump. That and a whole lot more to talk about. The poor crowds at Blundstone to see the Lions defeat the Roos in Fagan's 100th game, when there's a sellout looming today at Launceston between the Hawks and the Dogs. You're listening to Sunday Crunch Time, brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to play. Very good afternoon to you. Yes, indeed. Welcome to Sunday Crunch Time. So much to get through, and we'd love to converse with you all throughout the day. 0433 98 11 16, and on the socials at AFL Nation on Twitter. Our social feedback for Summit Internet, faster business internet. Sam Hargroves by name, joined by a stellar cast today for Sunday Crunch Time. He's the coach of Werribee, currently in the VFL, the 3-time Ross Glendening medalist, the greatest ever mature age recruit, it's safe to say. Michael Barlow, hello, mate.
Good to see you, Sam. Maddie and Dal, it's good to be in, and what a round of football already to dissect. And Dal's coming off a long run. He's ready to go.
You said you were coming off the long run about the Suns, so we're going to get to that. And introducing over 300 games, three All-Australians, if I'm not mistaken, one of my Bendigo brethren, Nick Dalsano. Hello, mate.
Very, are we up to the afternoon? Very good afternoon. Yes. Just ticked over. Very good afternoon to you all. Lovely
strong
to
start.
Be here. A very strong start. It's been a long weekend and a lot of things have happened. And I feel like we've got one game of football today, so we get to focus on something, but it feels like this has been one of the biggest weeks in football. You know, the defining moments in regards to the tribunal, a brilliant game of football in Geelong on Friday night with a kick after the siren. Then some interesting results yesterday, which we will get to. But looking forward to the next 6 or so hours with you all.
One of the greatest sets of tonsils in the game, Matty Hill. Good afternoon.
Hello, Sammy. Well, I tell you what, Daisy Pierce last week said we were the twos. I reckon this week we're just nudging for number
thirds.
One selection.
Oh, we're going up.
No, we're going up. There's no doubt about that.
What about Nicky Del Santo? He was with the seniors yesterday in Saturday crunch time.
It's rubbing off already. He's
and
been
I don't
in five
know whether
minutes.
They weren't happy with his performance or I don't know whether they thought he just needed to provide a bit extra, but he's on double duty going in the seniors and the reserves.
And like the modern world and like the AFL world, no communication off the back of my performance yesterday. I was just told, hey, you need to front up again and just get your work boots on.
We might get Jared Waitley on just to give us a 360 style analysis.
Not again. I'm getting a cold sweat over here.
All right, let's jump straight into this. So plenty to talk about throughout the course of the day. We'll catch up with Willem Drew, who had a career-best day yesterday in Port Adelaide's 50-point win over the Suns. 27 disposals for him, 10 clearances as well. Throughout the course of the afternoon, Blake Carosella will join us, Essendon assistant coach. Aren't we all very, very impressed with where they're at in their rebuild? They get some players back today. They're at Tasmania for the first time since 1992 when they went down there under Kevin Sheedy and played Fitzroy. So it's been a long time since the Dons have been in the Apple Isle. So Blake Carosella will talk to us about their preparation. Rob McCartney, Hawthorn's new head of footy as well. So we've got a stellar lineup today. But as always, we'll kick off with the Sunday Crunch brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max Born to Play. And we can't not start off with the Carlton Footy Club. So as I mentioned in the opener, this is their first game after announcing a full football department review. So for Mickey Barlow, for Nick Del Santo, when that gets announced, what would be at the very least you'd be expecting from a playing group in terms of response?
This is complex. This is complex. So there's multiple layers and multiple ways to look at this. So the first thing I hear from when you put your players hat on, Matty, is, and this says gets said all the time, your responsibility as an AFL player as it currently stands is to perform on the weekends. All this outside noise, whatever it may be, and clearly the review is the talk of the town at the moment for the Blues, but that shouldn't make any difference. This is what players say to themselves, Mickey, and join in when you're free. So you think from a player's perspective, I prepare, I play, we win, recover. It's just a constant cycle. And at times it gets a bit monotonous, but that's just the reality of it. So I would assume that they are saying those sort of things within their playing group, within the leadership group. Guys, it's another week. The guys that are responsible for taking care of the off-field stuff will take care of that. Our job is to prepare and perform on the weekends. Now, clearly they haven't been doing that, and there's enough reasons and examples, particularly in the last few weeks, Mickey, to probably show why they're not getting the outcomes that they want. Not that they deserve, that they want. Mm. So that's what they're saying. But the reality is it filters through in your subconscious, in the whispers, in your family asking you about it, in reading the paper, grabbing a coffee at your local cafe, wherever it is, this is what is getting spoken about. So it does seep through at some point.
Yeah, absolutely, Dale. And he summed it up brilliantly. So he started well in the reserves today, hasn't he? And I've been listening to Dale for a long time. And you talked recently about Collingwood when Nathan Buckley was going out. And you were asked the question, would you expect to see a lift from the players this week? And naturally, I think the neutral observer thinks, yeah, they should because it's the last game. You've just summed it up brilliantly because that is the effort that is required to be an AFL athlete and a professional athlete from a weekly standpoint. Mm. Another great point you made was everyone wants to be good. Everyone likes the idea of playing finals and going to the big time and watching grand finals. Everyone gets jealous. But realistically, there's only the two teams that put it all on the line for the longest period to get that opportunity. And Carlton strikes me as that club at the moment that like the idea of being the big club, having the big supporters, having the big backing, playing on the big stage, but they haven't got the sacrifice and what actually comes with being hard-nosed pros day to day. And it's telling in their effort. Mm. You'll see throughout all the footy shows this week, they'll go behind the goals and show some efforts. Show some efforts where it just becomes too hard. It's too hard. Yeah, lucky dip footy, and it told in the end last night.
But you two as players, how embarrassing is this stat? And when it comes up, it is the shameful. They were minus 39 in disposals, and they were still minus 38 in tackles. How does that happen? At halftime, I think there were 12 players that hadn't laid a tackle. And David Teague spoke about the fact that the defence system
it wasn't quite connected. He said it was part system and part player buy-in. He said he even put an extra number behind the ball and they still were able to take marks inside forward 50. And then he spoke about the fact that when they need to review this, they'll have honest, accountable feedback. They'll need to work hard. And then he said the most important thing, the players will need to buy in. Mm.
Drop them.
Yes.
Oh, I'm being said, drop them.
Yeah.
We have heard this. Carlton supporters have been hearing this for so long. There's no integrity of selection. And you're right, Mick. We'll see multiple, plenty of examples from behind the goals footage, which is the worst thing in the world as a player, because they can spot you from a mile away and they can identify what you did and what you didn't do. There's no accountability in selection. So you would love to have those meetings. But the reality is if you're not performing to the level, Mick, and you're spot on, you have to sacrifice something to get what you want, and they're not prepared to do it as it currently stands.
This is David Teague on the tackling.
Yeah, the tackling intensity, yeah, that was definitely. We picked a tough team. We thought we picked our tougher team. We thought that to beat GWS, you've got to be strong in the contest and win the ball, but then also tackle them and pressure them. And they beat us in the tackles, and then they beat us on the outside with their uncontested mark. So our ability to connect and defend as one wasn't good enough. And then also when they went forward, they were able to take some – we had an extra behind the ball, and they were still able to take some contested marks and got some good looks on goal. So, yeah, I think that we've had a few disappointing ones, but that's right up there. It was very hard. It was very frustrating to watch.
And what did you say to the players about the lack of tackling pressure? Because at halftime, I think the stat was 45 to 20 and you had 12 players that hadn't even laid a tackle in that time.
Yeah, we talked about it. We highlighted. We showed an example of just one stoppage where we actually won it. Our inability just to use the ball correctly with the first gives forced us to get tackled. And then when we had our chance, we didn't have the same intent on them. I thought their pressure was very good. And that's a mindset. We need to get better at it. It's been a constant for us. And we always like to balance the inside and the outside. And they beat us in that area today convincingly. And it's something it's really disappointing because we felt we picked we brought in Kennedy, Fogarty, Luke Parks, and we thought they're all strong in the tackling and competing area. So we need to continue to look at that and make sure we've got everyone buying in because today we didn't.
So that was Carlton coach David Teague. So we know the minus 38 in tackles, and they were minus, I think, about 8 in one percenters. The other thing that stands out in terms of not just tackling but work and effort, when you look at the top sort of 5 or 6 players in kilometres covered, there's only one Carlton player in there, and that's Sam Walsh, who worked his butt off. He had De Boer running with him, a man you know very well, Michael Barlow. He limited him to 20 touches. De Boer then switches and goes to Cripps and kept him to 4 handballs. But 15 Ks for Taranto, then Walsh had 15, but Whitfield, Kelly, Haynes. So that's not. It wasn't just the pressure around the ball. It was the work rate up and down the ground.
Yeah, spot on. And just to explain that, so it is very simplistic to look at it, and it is accurate to say, how can one team have so much more of the football, yet they have more tackles than the opposition? So you look at the numbers. So the Blues had +2 in contested possession. They were down by a few in clearances. So there's your contested situation where you're all pretty much stationary, where you don't have to spread. You don't have to work. You don't have to make decisions about coming forward to support or making a decision about, am I going forward or am I retreating and going back into defence? On the flip side, so they're +2 in a contested situation. They're -43 on the outside, uncontested possession. So what that says to me is when it's in nice and tight, the Giants were able to put pressure on. Therefore, they had 79 tackles. And that's just in those moments. But they've had 79 for the game. But as soon as it gets on the outside, who's prepared to run? Who's prepared to spread? Who's prepared to support a teammate run shotgun just in case they might need you there for support? That is why you have 41 tackles. As soon as it gets out of that contested situation, they're not seen.
But does it concern you when you hear the coach say the players aren't buying in? There seems to be some sort of issue there.
It's bad language.
It's a disconnect, as he said. But if they're not willing to try, there must be some issue just bubbling away there.
And it sounds to me, Matty, as if they went with a plan, clearly went with a plan, knowing you play the Giants and you want to play an uncontested game, you're no chance. You're no chance because of the way they use the ball. If you don't lay a glove on Whitfield, you don't lay a glove on Taranto, they're just going to slice you to bits like they did last night. So 41 tackles is a recipe for disaster. David Teague, is he clear enough in his messaging? Because he did say, we want to go and play a more contested brand. We need to play a contested brand against this, but we also want to do some stuff on the outside to expose them. Is that group sitting there just thinking, hearing what they want to hear? Oh, I like the idea of this outside thing. Mm. I like the idea of this outside thing, getting them on the outside, exposing them that way. But the real
the anxiety-riddled aspect of the contest and tackling in AFL football that they just didn't come to do.
And as you were saying, Nick, about how this issue of the internal review is seeping through the players' lives, surely they go to training on a daily basis or get on a football field and they feel like they've got this Damocles just hovering over them. Oh, I'm next to go under the hammer. So that can't be a good thing for a player's confidence.
No, you're right. But players live this year in, year out. So the only players that feel comfortable are those that are performing and have a contract probably the following year or...
For winning.
And I've been in this situation multiple times, I'm sure Mick has as well, where you have that feeling of, whether your club's going well or not, that you go, I need to perform. I need to perform because if I don't, then ultimately I don't get to play seniors week in, week out. So therefore, I need to have my backyard clean. I need to get enough of the football. I need to look like my stats at the end of the day are undroppable. I want to be in that position where I can point the finger at others and no one can do it to me. But off the back of that as well, Matty, is when your club's under pressure, they probably haven't actually changed their actions, the Blues yesterday, to what they were for the previous 12 or 13 weeks. They've been flimsy the whole time. So I'm not trying to contradict myself, but maybe that hasn't changed at all for them because that is who they have been this whole time.
So David Teague was asked the question, where do you feel like the team's improved under your coaching?
Oh, yeah, there's been some real growth. Unfortunately, it's probably been a little bit more from an individual point of view, and as a collective, our ability to execute as a whole has probably dropped away. I think we're not playing with the confidence and belief that we had when I first took over. There was an energy and a belief. I thought in the end of the third, start of the fourth, that they were starting to come back, and I was starting to see that energy and up on their toes. So that's our challenge. We need to make sure that we can bring energy and play the way we want to play all the time, regardless of the scoreboard, regardless of what's going on around us. We need to be able to take ownership of the game and make it happen. And that might be by tackling at times and limiting opposition's damage, but then also winning the ball and getting it forward and using the ball well. So we've got a fair bit of work to do. Our ball use wasn't good enough tonight, and our finish, and then definitely our defence is probably our biggest growth area.
So we spoke about there the honeymoon period when he took over the substitute teacher, which we've spoken about before. I've banged on about the difference between the substitute teacher and the full-time teacher. Mm. But the surprising thing about this, Michael Barlow, is that this wasn't a coach that was forced upon the playing group. This is a coach that the playing group fought so hard for. Mm. So how do you fight so hard for the coach and get the coach you want and then not buy in to what you're being asked to do?
Mm. There's an element outside looking in. There's an element of entitlement from that playing group in terms of this is good. Yeah, he's come in. He's telling us what we want. Mm. You know, we've had the coach go. Bolton, it was at the time the coach go, and this is fresh. This is new. It's the sugar hit, isn't it? That's one of Gerard Whateley's favourite. The sugar hit that you get. You get a result. Players feel good. That sugar hit. You know, if you drink too much alcohol, you have too much sugar. How do you feel after some time? Mm. Not too good. I need a change. I need something fresh to come in and cleanse me and make me feel better. And I think that's, at this stage, the clear disconnect is, and the murmurings externally are, that there's a disconnect between coaching group, administration and playing group.
Can I put one to you, Mick? You are a current coach. Mm. So what we've just heard there from David Teague is almost admitting, well, he is admitting that the group aren't buying into whatever he is, the messaging that he's giving. So a lack of effort, and then a lack of the mechanics, which the basics of mechanics is to put players in a position where they can execute a role at the best of their ability. So there is obviously a disconnect in that part. If you've got players that aren't giving maximum effort at VFL level, let alone at AFL level, which is another step up, how do you communicate to them? How do you change that? And ultimately, do they play? Mm. I don't care who it is. I'm asking across the board, your best player through to player number 35.
Mm. Yeah, it's a great question. It's something I'll add for you, and I'll come back to you afterwards. From my point of view, the way I coach is I'm incredibly lucky to have had some great coaches that essentially boiled it back to effort, and they actually gave visible examples of what effort looked like. And if you gave that effort, yes, we can fix up the mechanics and a bit of skill and this and that and have that discussion, but at the core of it has to be effort. My take on it is you've got to really laud the ones that do show effort. And Carlton have absolutely got players that show effort, so... show the vision of them, laud them, give them the awards, get them up in front of the group to the point where you're nearly embarrassing them. But then what you are doing is exposing those in the group room that are, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable here because I'm not up there. And it's a not so hidden message from coach to playing group that some are picking to do it and some aren't. And my one to you, Dale, is that period You know, it was highly publicised at the time when you went back to Casey, I think it was, from St Kilda. Ross put you back. He's just rolling his eyes to have a think about it. I don't think it might have only happened once.
Our only mistake Ross Lyons ever made as a coach. That's
but
correct.
On the back of it, you said your numbers look good. So a lot of these Carlton players, their numbers look okay.
Yep.
So they look untouchable. Saving yourself. You pad your stats, you get your numbers up, but you deep down know, well, there's probably something I'm not doing here. What was your specific example?
There's giving effort and then there's giving maximum effort.
Unconditional, isn't it?
Unconditional, without question. And you go into self-survival mode. There's no doubt about that. And you can see physical examples of the Blues yesterday calling for the ball when they weren't in position, running past for a handball when they knew that they were going to be under pressure, but they ultimately get a touch. Mm. Keeping the ball in on the boundary line when it is not the best thing for the team at that particular time, you are able to take it over, reset, but you just get a little squeezy handball in. All of those things to me show signs of desperation that I need to just make sure that my backyard is clean. And I went through it, Mick. There's no doubt about it. I felt like I was battling. I felt like for me to stay in the team at that time, and I was a senior player, but I felt like I just needed to make sure that I was getting enough of the football. And it wasn't what the team needed at that particular time. I dropped off in my training for a period of time. And the reason I love Ross, and I do make a bit of a joke about him, and I'll love him forever. Honest as the day is long, and looked me in the eye and said, hey, this isn't cutting it at the moment. Went back and played reserves based on effort. Like you just said, he goes, I don't care how much football you get. I can't remember how much I got. I don't think it was a heap. Came back in the next week and everything had changed.
So let me ask you this then, because from everything we're told, players really, really like David Teague, really, really like him, get along fantastically. How much does a coach need to be a friend, but how much do they need to be a figure of authority? Like, what's the right balance? Did Ross have the balance? You both played under him.
Yep.
Did he have the right balance between authoritative, dictator, but also developer? Was he a friend or was he – what was Ross Lyons?
All of the above.
Yep.
And he was every one of them at different times at the appropriate time. Mm. Ross was as supportive as a coach as I've ever had in my life. Really empathetic, family, knew everything about those sort of areas of your life, which a lot of people wouldn't know. But you'd also walk past Ross Lyons' office and be a little bit nervous at times. Mm. Because
that's great, isn't it? That's
just a little bit of trepidation, thinking, oh, he might call me in here for a chat. But on the flip side, you could also have the weeks where you'd say, Ross, you got a minute? He goes, I've got 10 for you. Yeah. Come on in, let's chat.
Yeah.
He's got some great examples from my time with him, and Dale summed it up really well. That sense of having him as a friend, it was minimal. Like, the percentage-wise was minimal, but you're right, he made that apparent to you behind closed doors. Some of his great quotes, my door's always open. And that sounds like a bit of a throwaway line, but his door was always open to the point. And then he'd always pick up on little cues. Like, you'd walk past, he'd just know something's up and be like, right, you and I, my door's open. And it's not saying come and see me, but it's saying come and see me. And then you walk in and you're feeling nervous and anxious, but you walk out feeling like a truckload of weight's been lifted off your shoulders. So I know, the David Teague situation, he's a fantastic person. And he's, they're the hardest jobs in Australia, essentially, aren't they? Coaching an AFL club. And he's going through the whirlwind of it now. He needs his players to buy in publicly and get right behind him and show some unity whilst the world's crashing down around them.
So the hardest part for these football teams, and I reckon we're going to talk about a couple more, such as North Melbourne and the Gold Coast in this hour as well. You mentioned the word, Mickey, entitlement, and you said, Nick, drop them. But when you've got football teams with no depth, it's really tough.
I had a look at their twos yesterday. So they had Casbolt, Murphy, Cottrell's played a bit of footy now. He's come up. So they've got a big – like the one is the depth. The depth is an interesting one. Matt Kennedy came in. He was their unconditional player last night. He was effort. He was tackle. He was contest. He was outside. And he's a guy scrapping and clawing.
Mm.
So, yes, there's not a huge amount down there. There is some numbers down there. But like the Dal Sano Milne situation, probably 12, 13 years ago now. It's a long time ago, but people remember that. They're really landmark moments. Is it Zach Williams? Is it Jack Martin? They're the statements that are memorable and can shift behaviours.
Matt Rendell wrote a fantastic article in The Age when he looked at their list with a deep dive, and he pointed to the fact that if you look at Geelong, even up to an old list, their top 10 players, so that they're over 28 are still in their top 10 players. Richmond's over 28 are still in their top 10 players. He said maybe Kerno of the over 28s at Carlton are in their top 10 players. And that's an issue in terms of who you can rely on week in and week out and their leadership out on field as well. So it's very much worth a read of where Carlton are at. This article of Matt Rendell's is absolutely bang on the money. And there's not many better at analysing a list. We will keep talking about Carlton. The ladder for 40 winks will do. This is Crunch Time, brought to you by the powerful 3-litre turbo Isuzu D-Max. No matter the adventure, the Isuzu D-Max is born to play. Willem Drew from Port Adelaide up next.
Crunch Time, brought to you by the powerful 3-litre turbo diesel Isuzu D-Max. No matter the adventure, the Isuzu D-Max is born to play.